crown. Goodbye to the dear old mum, mummified on gin and rum. Smile and wave and just play dumb. Goodbye to the crown.
Hi there, you're watching The Monarchy, and The Monarchy is watching Britain. I'm Samson Sees, your host. We are here to cover the hidden issues about the UK that mainstream sources would not dare broadcast. We give you the other side of the stories that are making news, and that's where it all gets controversial, and probably confusing a lot of the time. Coming up later in this edition of our show, we will explore some mysterious activities concerning MI5, MI6, and some Russian political figures. We'll then move on to a series of dodgy events involving the UK and what they call Saudi Arabia. And we'll finally finish off by talking about a very familiar face, the UK monarch itself. But just before we start on our topics, prepare yourselves for the brief headlines. Here they are. Sudan's Islamic Constitution Front, ICF, says Britain, the US and the Zionist Israeli regime are hatching a joint plot to divide up the African country into several hostile areas. According to the Sudanese coalition, the plot aims at overthrowing the Islamic Sharia law and imposing a secular system of government in the country. SOAS University of London is involved in secret espionage activities under the cover name of one of the world's academic centres in Middle Eastern studies. The university, previously the School of Oriental and African Studies, commonly known as SOAS, was founded in 1916 with the aim of training British security forces serving for MI6 and MI5. According to anti-extremism charity Faith Matters, more than 160 incidents against Muslims have been reported during the first 5 days after the Woolwich attack, while the average number previously stood at 4 to 8 a day. Along with the incidents reported, there have been several arson and paint bomb attacks on mosques and a handful of racist demonstrations by far-right groups, especially the English Defence League. Britain has the highest food and energy inflation in Western Europe as UK households are struggling with their biggest squeeze on living standards at a time of austerity. According to the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, food and energy prices in Britain are rising faster than anywhere else in Europe. The UK's inflation rate for food was 4.6% in April, compared to the same month last year. This compares with 3.7% in Germany and 1.6% in France. A major new report has revealed that Britain is suffering an abrupt increase in food and energy prices than anywhere in Europe. The rise comes as the crippling squeeze on household finances continues to take its toll across the country, British media outlets reported. Northern Ireland Secretary Theresa Villiers warns against the severe threat dissident Republican groups pose to the country for years to come, describing loyalists' protests about flags in recent months as hugely worrying. The Secretary of State said that she was also concerned about the looming Orange March season. Northern Ireland has been witnessing a surge in attacks on security services in recent months.
Wow, what a sensitive subject this one is. Where do we begin?
Here we have suspicious deaths in London, one including a radioactive toxic poison. There's the Kremlin in Russia, the MI5 in the UK, and MI6. Well, they might be everywhere you could possibly imagine. Anyway, about these unlikely deaths. So why are they all happening in London? It looks like a bit of a coincidence, don't you think? It makes one think, who is actually benefiting from all these events? Perhaps a new but familiar motto is needed here. You better watch out, 'cause Britain's about.
The widow of former Russian spy Alexander Litvinenko has accused the British government of seeking to strike a secret political deal with the Kremlin after an inquest into his death abandoned its search for the truth. Litvinenko, who was once an officer of the Russian Federal Security Service and later a fierce critic of the Kremlin, died on November the 23rd, 2006. He was poisoned on November the 1st, 2006 with polonium-210, a highly toxic radioactive isotope, at the Millennium Hotel in central London.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Speaker. In my previous statement, I highlighted the issues being addressed by government in response to the death of Mr. Litvinenko. I confirmed that traces of the radioactive isotope, polonium-210, had been found in Mr. Litvinenko's urine and at several London occasions. To date, around 24 venues have or are being monitored, and experts have confirmed traces of contamination at around 12 of these venues.
Ben Emerson, the lawyer acting for Litvinenko's widow, has already accused the British government of dancing to the Russian tarantella in an attempt to avoid damage to trade deals with Moscow. But a closer look at another mysterious death of a Russian oligarch residing in London could draw a different picture of Britain just dancing to the tune of Russia. Exiled Russian oligarch Boris Berezovsky was found dead in southwest London on March the 23rd. Berezovsky defected to Britain in 2003 after he faced charges of embezzling $47 million and conspiring to topple the constitutional structure of the Russian Federation. In London, he turned into an anti-Putin figure. He managed to survive 11 attempts on his life in London, but he finally died under suspicious circumstances. Some political observers claim that his death could have been done by the British MI6. A Russian government spokesman has said that Berezovsky had recently requested Putin to let him return home. In his last interview in the Forbes magazine, just one day before his death, Berezovsky had said that his life had become meaningless and that he wished a return to Russia. Britain had granted asylum to Berezovsky, and the return of an MI6 agent to Moscow could have cost Britain dearly. Therefore, Britain might have killed him in a bid to cover up the events of the past decade. However, there is no strong evidence about the elimination of Berezovsky, whom Britain had used as a pressure lever against Russia over the past decade. MI6 must have had a stronger motivation to kill him. Due to his failure in establishing a strong base to topple Putin, Berezovsky had practically lost his effectiveness. The British police said on March the 24th that chemical, biological, and nuclear experts have found nothing suspicious in their search of Berezovsky's residence. Putin is certainly happy with the death of one of his exiled opponents, no matter if he had committed suicide or died naturally.
A man who was always full of life, of plans, of determination to succeed in every single task, whether it's a personal or political or business task. And death cannot be sort of associated with that man. Anybody who knew him close on personal business or matters would probably describe him first as full of life, man who never sleeps and man who can never probably expire. So the news of his death is a total shock.
The death of Berezovsky removes a major stumbling block to the normalization of strained ties between London and Moscow.
Britain needs allies. And we saw the Americans coming to Moscow too, trying to kiss and make up with the Russians or reset the button. But it's really that the Russians have a lot more cards in this. And the British, I mean, I think Miliband is really, I wouldn't use the word desperate, but maybe close to it. They need cooperation with Russia after Britain really alienated Russia for so many years.
Meanwhile, British banks and companies would benefit from Berezovsky's legacy, estimated at $500 million.
Time to move on to a more embattling subject. What could it possibly be other than Britain's foreign affairs? But who's involved this time? Not the Saudi regime members again, surely. You're having a laugh, but it cannot be denied. British officials have been toying with what they call Saudi Arabia big time throughout the 20th century and so on. And why not? All that access to large oil supplies in the Middle East, along with several obedient figures doing what they want and when they want. What more could intelligence agencies ask for?
In recent years, revelations have been made concerning the involvement of members of the Al Saud royal family in scandals in the UK, ranging from murder to bribery. Despite the Saudi regime's efforts to keep the veil of secrecy and the British government's attempts to downplay the controversial affairs for the sake of its petrodollars. In October 2010, a British court sentenced a Saudi prince to the maximum penalty of life in prison for murdering his servant. Prince Saud Abdulaziz bin Nasser, a grandson of Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah bin Abdulaziz, was jailed for killing Bandar Abdullah Abdulaziz in London's Marrowbone Hotel on the 15th of February 2010, after subjecting him to a sadistic campaign of violence and sexual abuse. In March 2013, however, Britain's Ministry of Justice confirmed that the 36-year-old royal flew back to Saudi Arabia after he was granted a transfer to a prison in his homeland. In June 2010, British Foreign Secretary William Hague also released details of crimes diplomatic staff were accused of, citing staff from the Saudi Arabian mission being suspected of human trafficking and sexual assault. Moreover, in July 2011, a report showed that a number of foreign diplomats and embassy staff in London were being arrested for crimes, with Saudi Arabia's embassy topping the list. According to the figures released by the Metropolitan Police, Saudi Arabia's mission has produced the highest number of offenders, with four of its embassy staff nabbed for drink and drive charges and another for shoplifting. Meanwhile, in July 2012, Saudi Princess Sara bint Talal bin Abdulaziz claimed asylum in the UK over fears for her safety back home. The princess went to the UK in 2007 after she fell out with her 80-year-old father, Prince Talal bin Abdulaziz Al Saud. The political asylum request, which came weeks after the death of her uncle and main supporter, Crown Prince Nayef bin Abdulaziz, who was an opponent of her father, offered an insight into the tensions within the Saudi royal family. In March 2013, court papers showed Prince Mashal bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, a former defense minister, and his son Prince Abdulaziz bin Mashal were involved in a case of a London-based company that allegedly facilitated money laundering. According to contested allegations in court documents obtained by The Guardian and Financial Times, a brother and nephew of Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah bin Abdulaziz are embroiled in litigation with Jordanian businessman Faisal Al Mhairat over London-registered telecommunications company FI Call Limited, which they jointly owned.
Okay, we haven't spoken about her for a long time, and we seriously don't want to digress from the title of this show. So let's highlight and talk about Her Majesty the Queen, or Elizabeth II. Elizabeth Windsor? No. Let's really go with the full name this time. Elizabeth Alexandra Mary Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. That's the one. Many might say her full name sounds more German than it does English. Marvellous.
Polls suggest that most Britons believe Queen Elizabeth II should step down from the British throne and allow the succession to pass on if she becomes too ill to fulfill her duties. According to the Sunday Times YouGov poll, 48% of Britons say the British Queen should abdicate in the event that she becomes too ill to perform her public duties, compared to only 43% who believe she should continue under those circumstances. The survey of 1,945 people also found that 53% of Britons say the Queen should resist calls for abdication and remain in her role for life, representing a fall from 64% earlier in March. Moreover, the data shows voters' support for Prince Charles rising, with 50% of respondents saying he would make a good king, a 13% increase since May last year. Elizabeth is 86. Charles, at 64, has been heir to the throne since he was 3. The idea of abdicating is particularly unpleasant for Elizabeth because her uncle, King Edward VIII, abdicated in 1936 so he could marry Wallis Simpson, a divorced American woman. The resulting scandal, remembered as a low point for the monarchy, brought her father, King George VI, to the throne. The British taste for long-term monarchs is unusual. Jean, the Grand Duke of Luxembourg, now 92, also abdicated in favour of his son, Henry, in 2000. And more importantly, earlier in April, Dutch Queen Beatrix abdicated in favour of her eldest son, Willem Alexander, who became the Netherlands' first king since 1890. But according to the British Constitution, British monarchs are allowed to go mad, like George III. They can turn hermit, like Queen Victoria, dubbed the Widow of Windsor after her self-enforced seclusion in Windsor Castle on Prince Albert's death. But they are not allowed to abdicate. The British Queen is like the Catholic Pope. Only death gets Britons a new one.
Abdication's a dirty word in their family. They, unfortunately, which is how the Queen sees it, she became Queen because of an abdication, which resulted in her father becoming King, of course. So, no, she vowed when she was crowned Queen back in 1953, that she would serve all her days, and she will stick to that. That was her vow. She took it very seriously. And to give it up would be something she wouldn't contemplate.
There is an anecdote that early in 1980, Queen Elizabeth received word, possibly from Queen Juliana herself, that Juliana was going to make way for her daughter Beatrix soon. Allegedly, Queen Elizabeth slammed the phone down, angrily declaring that this was typically Dutch and staying in a foul mood for the rest of the day, or perhaps the rest of her life. This comes as anti-monarchy sentiments are gaining momentum across Britain. Many Britons see the monarchy as a dysfunctional system and being pretty keen on getting rid of monarchs altogether, just as her other counterparts across the continents did. France's last monarch, Napoleon III, was deposed in 1870. Portugal's went in 1910.
I'm here to protest the unaccountable power of the crown, what it symbolises, which is hereditary privilege, and the constitutional power that it still has.
The Second World War did it for several kings. The communists forced Peter II of Yugoslavia to stand down in 1945. Italy's last king, Umberto II, ruled for a month before he was kicked out in a 1946 referendum. The last king of Romania, Michael I, now 91, was forced to abdicate in 1947 by the Communist Party, whereas the Greek monarchy was abolished in 1973. Spain has jumped from monarchy to republic and back again. When Juan Carlos became king in 1975, Spain hadn't been a monarchy since 1931, when the Second Spanish Republic was declared. To make things messier, Juan Carlos's grandfather, Alfonso XIII, didn't abdicate his rights to the throne until 1941. So Juan Carlos's father, the Infante Juan of Spain, Count of Barcelona, never ruled, despite only dying in 1993, aged 79. Across the world, however, the Queen does have a few long-lived rivals, who don't go in for abdication either. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia is 88. King Rama IX of Thailand at 85, who succeeded to the throne in 1946, is the only monarch to rule longer than the British Queen.
Well, that just about does it for today. What do you think? You want more? Well, tough. You're going to have to wait for next week's episode. But remember, whenever you want, you can Facebook us. Our profile is called Press TV UK Desk. Go ahead and add us as a friend if you haven't already. Or if you prefer, you can always message us via email. That's britain@presstv.ir. We always look forward to hearing about your ideas and opinions. Until our next show, take care, stay well, and goodbye from me and the team here at the studio. Have a good week.
Mummified on gin and rum. Smile and wave and just play dumb. Goodbye to the crowd.